This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Gareth Coker, and it's so great to have a chance to catch up.
I'm back again. Is this number four? I've lost count at this point, but thank you for having me again.
Well, it's my pleasure, and boy, you have had quite a year, and congratulations for all of the awards and the recognition that your soundtrack for Ori and the Will of the Wisps has received. I mean, it's all well-deserved, but congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's... I mean, as I've said many times, like it's really a privilege to get to work on a game with that kind of canvas, and you know, not just the music. I'm glad the game has gotten recognition like across the board for, you know, its design, storytelling, art, animation, like all of it. Like it really came together, and I've kind of enjoyed seeing it on the new consoles. If you have the gear for it, like seeing this game in 4K and running at 120 frames per second, which is not many people have, because you need a pretty good TV or a monitor to do that, it is extraordinary. They've really done some quality of life improvements to the game that really helped it shine even more than the initial release, which is really cool.
Oh, yeah, that's phenomenal. And now you've got a new score for Yes. Immortals Fenyx Rising. And it's, you know, it's kind of interesting because the very first time we talked at MAGFest, it was about your soundtrack for Minecraft, Greek mythology. And I was wondering if maybe it was kind of fun to revisit that whole world and come at it from a different direction.
Well, you know what's funny is like the path of Immortals is literally following almost the exact same path on of my Minecraft journey, because Minecraft, it started out with Greek mythology, as you just mentioned, and Immortals is set in Greek mythology. Now, Immortals has a DLC coming out, but the DLC is set in China. It's like a standalone experience. It's like my second mythology pack for Minecraft was Chinese mythology, and Immortals downloadable content follows on the Greek thing by doing a Chinese mythology pack. It's actually hilarious. So I'm just waiting for Immortals Norse mythology and then Immortals Egyptian mythology, and then we'll have the whole set. The parallels are kind of uncanny at this point. But with that, the games are obviously very stylistically different.
Oh, absolutely. The story of Immortals, I mean, just super, super briefly, is that Typhon had been imprisoned under a mountain by Zeus, and he escapes, and he's created a schism with the gods. He's taken away all of their powers, and Zeus travels to where he chained Prometheus to a rock and kind of strikes a bargain to try to get this problem solved. And Prometheus says, you know, I will bet you that a mortal can put things right. And Zeus takes the bet, and then enter Fenyx after surviving a shipwreck. And so what was different about this world, this version of Greek mythology, than the Minecraft version?
Well, I think the main thing here, and it's an obvious difference, but the main thing is this really actually is a character-driven piece. Whereas Minecraft, my job was purely to set the scene and not to overstep my boundary as a composer. Like, the music rarely gets above an intensity level of 7 on the Minecraft Greek soundtrack, which I think is fine. This soundtrack, it's 1 to 10 for sure. And that really is reflective of Fenyx's journey throughout the game. But also, one of the nice things about the game is each part of the Golden Isle is kind of divided into different regions that each god is kind of trapped in. So when you meet Aphrodite, she kind of has her own area that, you know, reflects her personality. So it's very lush and beautiful.
Thank you.
then you go to Hephaestus's area. The whole area is basically one giant interconnected forge, which you have to reactivate. And there's like a gazillion puzzles that you have to do. They're kind of ingenious with the puzzles in this game. Basically, all of these, I think, how many gods are there? Five, six. All of the different areas need to have music that matches their personalities as well as what matches the visuals. So we kind of get like a whole bunch of different suites of music representing each god. Ares has a suite, Hephaestus has a suite, Aphrodite, Hermes, Zeus, and Athena. There we go, I got them all. So all of them kind of have their own like suite of music that, like, when you enter that area, you kind of know you're in Zeus's area through not just how it looks, but also how the music sounds.
That is such an interesting way of, you know, defining the world of the game, to give each area its own musical personality. And yet, consistently, the music sounds really Greek all the way through. And so I'm just curious, in your mind, you know, what makes Greek music sound the way it does?
That's a tricky one, because it's like, there's not a huge amount of material. I remember doing this for the Minecraft pack as well. It's like, you know, there's not a huge amount you can look for in terms of research. Whereas, you know, when you're looking at traditional classical music, like there's mountains of documentation. There's obviously recordings, but Greek music, you're relying on scholars who really know their stuff, and the handful of people who have, you know, uploaded their stuff to YouTube. But there aren't, you know, there's not really a high demand of albums of ancient Greek music.
Yeah, so I can think of
like
one.
It's like kind of hard to get too much material. But the key, the one key thing that keeps coming up is the scales they use, or the modes. There are certain things in the scales that a lot of the traditional Greek music uses that are idiomatic to making it feel like it's from that time period. And when you start limiting yourself to those choices, it makes things a little bit easier. The next aspect of that, and this is something I didn't want to like go too far on, but I needed a little bit of it. Ubisoft were really explicit about not having a authentic Greek sounding score. They wanted a flavor of it, and the reason for that is partly down to the tone of the game. Like, if you've seen any of the marketing or if you've seen any of the gameplay, this is not a serious game, and the visuals are very fantastical, and that allows you to stretch boundaries with music. I think if they'd made a photorealistic game, you know, let's just compare with the latest Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which like looks ridiculous. It's so good. But if they'd made it look like that, the music that has been done for this game would feel like it's trying too hard, because you don't have that suspension of disbelief when you're in a photorealistic world that you do have when you're in something that is a bit more stylized. So I was like, well, what can I do? We need something. And I'm like, what can I get that is authentic and also is very flexible? And I looked at the Greek lyre and the kithara and the pharmynx, and I was like, okay, where can I get one of these? These are traditional plucked Greek instruments. And I did some searching online, and there's one luthier in Greece who literally does the real thing. They have their own workshop. It's like in a pretty remote part of Greece. I'm still not 100% sure if they use real tortoise shells for the actual body of the instrument. I know they definitely use real horns, and I researched to make sure they're doing it ethically and doing it properly. But they have researched in incredible depth how to make these ancient instruments, and so I didn't commission one, I actually commissioned three, because these instruments don't have a huge amount of flexibility in terms of like the range of notes that you can play. So I picked three in different keys that were all tuned to the same mode, although you can kind of retune them because they function like a guitar. And there's just something different to using them than there is to using like just a traditional orchestral harp or a tradition, you know, a Western guitar or something like that. It just, it's the body of the instrument that has a certain resonance to it that I can't really explain, but it is felt. And I was like, this is really cool. I'm going to put this in as many tracks as possible without it being overbearing. And That was like kind of a flavor. If you play the game and listen to most of the exploration music in the game while you're playing, you are going to hear a Greek lyre of some kind in almost every single cue. It's not going to be at the forefront too often, but it's kind of always there. The other instrument that I want to talk about is the aulos, which is used almost exclusively in the Tartarus vaults. Tartarus is the Greek underworld, and there are 60 vaults in the game. You don't have to complete all of them. You have to complete quite a lot of them to become more powerful. And in some of the vaults, some of the power, without giving too much away in terms of the story, some of the gods' powers are locked away in the vaults. Anyway, you have to go through these vaults, and it's a very, very otherworldly place. And the Aulos, if you play it like in a room with like no effects or anything, and you're right next to the instrument, if you're not with a skilled player, it sounds horrendous. It really does. Like, if you go onto YouTube and just type in Aulos, A-U-L-O-S, Aulos performance, and listen to a few recordings, you'll be like, I wouldn't want to listen to this for that long. So I was like, well, I'm gonna have Kristen Nagus, my regular woodwind collaborator, and it seems like every game composer's woodwind collaborator at this point. I'm gonna get her the instrument and see what she can do with it. And she sent me some stuff back, and I was like, okay, if I put a ton of reverb on it, put all kinds of effects on it, and we end up with this kind of wall of sound that is generated by the Aulos, and then I'm able to like write around it as well. And you can hear it on the album. I think it's track 10, Aulos of Tartaros. I was like, that's it. That's the sound of the underworld in this game. Because we've seen other games do the Greek underworld. Even the Assassin's Creed Odyssey second DLC was literally set in Hades underworld, and the soundtrack is completely different, and it totally works. But I was like, this is the soundtrack for the underworld puzzle vaults in this game. And so pretty much whenever you're in the underworld, you're going to hear the Aulos. And I did wonder if it'd be too much. And it would have been too much if I treated the instrument as a traditional Greek instrument, but I didn't. It was all about taking a handful of instruments from the ancient era and kind of modernizing them and fitting them to like 21st century production values, but also making sure that they fit the game and don't feel too harsh and abrasive. And again, my approach would have been different if it was a photorealistic world, but it wasn't. So it kind of gave me more room and more flexibility to create a sound that on its own, I don't think is very accessible, but I think Aulos of Tartaros is actually a pretty accessible track to listen to, at least in my opinion. So that gives you, yeah, that gives you a little bit of insight into like how I kind of put the sound world together and forged it for the game.
Yeah, and having those two really fundamentally identifiable instruments from, you know, thousands of years ago. You can see pictures of them in the the drawings on the amphora. And so do they come with instructions?
Well, it's funny. I actually asked the luthier about that, and yeah, it comes with a tuning kit. It comes with like a book. It was like going through my beginner piano lessons like all over again. And fortunately, you know, the lyre is not fundamentally a difficult instrument to play. The hardest thing about it is keeping the thing in tune. Oh my goodness, it goes out of tune so quickly. You have to be like ready to record, because it takes, especially when you first get the instrument, it takes a lot of retuning just to get it to stay in place. It's just the way the instrument is constructed. The strings kind of fall out of tune pretty quickly. Added to that is that it's really hot here in California most of the time. And, you know, hot temperatures don't generally do stringed instruments any favors when it comes to tuning. But I was able to get the instruments to behave long enough that I was able to get good recordings out of them. As for the Alos, I mean, you'd have to ask Kristen. All I know is that there's two of them. To generate the sound, you're kind of blowing two wind instruments at the same time, and it seems like you change the pitch by like rotating each part of the Alos. It makes absolutely no sense to me. I don't even know how someone came up with it. All I do know is that it creates a sound like I've never heard before, and I was like, that's interesting. And yeah, all of the Underworld tracks, I say this a lot on a lot of the scores that I do, it felt like a cheat code. I was like, oh, it's another Underworld track, let's just add Alos and then write around it. But the thing is, it did actually work, because it kind of like, it sets the tone, and then I'm writing harmonies around what the Alos is doing. Because one of the good things about it is it doesn't have a huge range. It's kind of like right in the middle of the range, so it still leaves room for the bass, and it still leaves room for a melody to be played on top of it. So it's actually, even though it's a mood setter, it can be a melody instrument, it can also be like the perfect bed instrument to like put in the background as well.
Wow, I would love to know what Kristen's neighbors thought when she was first figuring out.
Fortunately, I think she lives in a detached house. I'm not 100% sure, but yes, it's if she was in an apartment in Los Angeles, I think there would be serious complaints.
Well, having laid all of that down, that groundwork and narrowing the instrumentation, how did you get started on the melodic part of it, like with the theme for Phoenix?
So it's the funny thing about the theme. So the first piece of music I wrote once I'd signed on to the game was actually for the E3. Where are we? It would have been the E3 2019 trailer. Gosh, that seems ages ago now, but actually it isn't. And Ubisoft don't usually use in-game music for their marketing, especially when no music has been written. And they were like, hey, this is actually really good. And they put it into the trailer. And I'm like, okay, well, if they like that, then let's see what more I can do with it. And in the trailer, you'll hear a hint of the bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum. That's like the first part of the melody. And I was like, okay, well, that's pretty good. I'm going to work with that. And then it basically turned into a, you know, 16 measure thing, you know, about 45 seconds. I was like, I've got the tune here. And it was literally the first thing I wrote for the game. And the process after that, this isn't really a main theme where it's like you play the theme and then repeat it again and then you're done, which is exactly what I did on both Ori games. Like both Ori games, the theme plays, it's repeated again with a slightly thicker orchestration, and then it's done. And that's fine. This, I was like, I want to tell the story of Phoenix in like one piece of music, which having read the script at that point, I was like, wow, this is pretty epic. So it was a chance to kind of stretch my legs and, you know, write the theme intimately at the beginning, and then just have it grow and kind of twist and turn, because there's all kinds of dangers that Phoenix encounters during the game, and just write something that used the theme again but in different ways, but also kind of went in a couple of different directions. And I would say like most of the sound of the game is drawn from that initial piece of music, Heart of the Hero, the first track on the soundtrack. honestly, it doesn't really happen that often that the first piece of music ends up being the theme. It's happened to me on one other game, and it was Ark Survival Evolved. The theme for Ark, Ark 1, was literally the first piece of, it was actually my pitch for the game, and ended up being the main theme. But it doesn't usually happen like that. Like, I didn't find the Ori theme until, you know, much further after I'd written, like, you know, dozens of minutes of music. So this one was just a pleasant surprise, and it's kind of a nice thing to get out of the way, because it also sets a tone for the, not just for me, but also for the development team. They're like, this is a piece of music that sounds finished, it's like a good length, they can kind of just put it on, and they're like, our game will sound like this. So it's kind of a good thing to get started with. I will say one other thing, though. Like, one of the things I've started doing recently is kind of writing a piece of music that won't necessarily be used in the game, but is really just a gigantic long piece that might represent like everything the player can do in the game. So it might be super quiet, there might be puzzle music. It's like this giant suite of music, and I know I'm not the only composer to do this, that is really just a conceptual suite. And from that conceptual suite, all of the, you know, there's usually some themes or some instrumentation or some interesting things that the developer might like, and they'll be like, I don't like minute 1 to 2, but I do like minutes 3, 4, and 5. Take from that and go from there. Fortunately for Immortals, Heart of the Hero, we're just like, we like all of it, so just take from that and continue doing the score.
Wow, what an amazing way to work, though. And although it's a lot of work up front, I imagine, yes, during the whole process of writing the soundtrack, it actually saves you some time, because it's like you've got this little pantry, this little store cupboard of musical ideas that you can choose from.
Well, one thing about this game is that because it's consistently set, it's set on the Golden Isle, and it does have like the Greek harmonic vocabulary that I, you know, implied earlier with the scales, a lot of choices are made already, and then further choices are made once like we've established instrumentation. Like, I knew they wanted it to be orchestral. What Heart of the Hero does, it kind of defined like how much of the synthetic and magical and ethereal elements were going to be in the score. And I think I would say the ratio on the soundtrack is like, this is very rough, but it's like probably 65% orchestral and then 35% the other cool stuff, whatever that may be, whether it's the lyre, the aulos, or the synths, or the bells, or whatever. And it's just about finding that balance. And yeah, kind of once you do, you're right, it does make writing much easier down the line, when it's just about kind of like pumping out more tracks that are required by the game.
Well, that makes it sound like factory work, and obviously it's not.
It isn't. No, I guess it isn't. I guess just when you see 70 tracks from the soundtrack, it's because I looked at it and I was like, I cut that thing down. I've decided, by the way, that I'm really not one for curated soundtracks. I think the age of curated soundtracks is probably over, at least in terms of video games. I get like wanting to have a good listening experience. I just don't think it's possible anymore to like get most video game soundtracks into a 70-minute listening experience. The one exception, obviously, is if there's a vinyl release, then you have to curate. But in terms of digital and streaming, I'm just like, I'm going to give the fans everything. And that's why my two big releases this year are 60 tracks and 70 tracks. And I don't apologize for it at all. And actually, people still complain about the tracks that I missed on the Ori 2 soundtrack, even though there's only like a handful. So I'm just like, I really should just put out everything and just format it in a way that the tracks are easy to listen to.
Well, they are. And with what listening to the soundtrack and the whole sweep does is it's got such a nice balance between the exploration music and then the really intense battle music. And you've mentioned that writing the music, this is like your first truly open world game,
yes,
to write music for. So what were some of the challenges that threw your way?
Oh, you've nicely segued into probably like my favorite aspect of the game's music. When they first told me they wanted exploration suites that had to be able to interchange on the fly between walking, flying, horse riding, and combat, I honestly was like, you guys are nuts. This isn't going to work. But you've hired me to do a job, so I have to figure it out. And I honestly didn't believe that it would work effectively, but they seem to have designed a system that actually makes it pretty seamless. And it's one of the things that aids it is that there's a very distinct animation when you switch to horse riding in the game, or when you switch from horse riding to flying, or when you get out of flying and go back to walking. Basically, changing from one state to the other is aided visually on screen. And what that does for the brain is it makes you not notice the music transition, and it makes it feel smooth. Now, I will say that the music transitions are smooth anyway, because I was able to write the music to do that, but the transitions are aided by what's happening visually on screen. And this is something I bang on about in Ori all the time, and I wish more developers do it. It's not about just creating the perfect music transition system working in isolation. It's about how it matches up with what's going on screen. Because if there is a visual indicator on screen of a transition, the brain will not notice as heavily like a music transition. One of my pet peeves in games, especially open world games, is when you can hear the music transition. The classic thing is you're wandering around, and then like the combat cue starts, and you're like, wait, where is the combat coming from? Like, it kills any sense of emotion. Now, when you're clearly in combat, yes, that's absolutely the time to dial up the music. But the music's in a lot of open world games, it either preempts or it happens too late. And I'm not going to say Immortal System is perfect, but I will say that like I was surprised how effective it was when I first picked it up, because I was very skeptical at how well it will work. And what that does, you know, I talked about having each region having its own musical feel, but now, of course, within each region, you're also going to have a different musical feel to that region depending on how you are navigating the area. So I'm going to give you an idea of how much music was done for the game. So Zeus's area. Zeus has his own sound, and Zeus has 5 different exploration suites. Now, of those 5 exploration suites, there is a flying piece, horse riding, walking, and combat. So each of the 5 suites has 4 different layers. So that's 20 different layers you could possibly hear while you are navigating the Zeus area, depending on where you are. And that gives, for an open world game, tremendous flexibility, and it is all seamless. And I have to be honest, it's something I'm pretty proud of, although I can't take full credit for it, because the music supervisor, Jerome Angelo, did an unbelievable job putting this system together. He showed me a bit of it in Wise, the middleware software, and it all just went completely over my head. I'm like, that's all you, buddy. You did a tremendous job, and you're making me look really good. But the thing that I really appreciate is that he was able to explain it to me really clearly, so that I could just focus on writing the music and delivering it in a way that he could implement it properly. Now, what I will say is the part where I should take credit is that I came up kind of with a bunch of choices that were able to make this system work. So any of the flying pieces in the game, if you're flying, you're going to hear Kristin on oboe or English horn. That is ubiquitous throughout the game. If you are flying, you're going to hear that instrument, and you're not going to hear very much else. So flying is like the lightest part of these suites. Horse riding, you're going to hear some light percussion, and you're going to hear the lyre or some kind of plucked or strummed instrument, and it's pretty active because you're horse riding and you're moving pretty quickly.
Yeah.
The exploration is when you're walking around. Now, you spend most of your time walking around, and the actual exploration music is the most melodic because you're spending the most time doing that, and I wanted that to be the part that like people kind of get their hooks into. That said, the melody is often reflected. It's often the same melody when you're flying, but it's going to be in the oboe or English horn. When you're walking around, it might be in strings or it might be in another instrument. And then lastly, combat music generally uses the same harmony, but it kind of takes all of the melody out, so it just provides more like punchy activity. So I stayed true to that kind of like system when coming up with, you know, the way to like do these 4 different layers. But obviously I had to take into account that each region had a different sound palette. So I still had to like make sure that it generally like sounded like Ares or sounded like Hephaestus while keeping all of these other parameters in place. But once it worked for one of them, I was like, there it is. This is going to work for all of the different areas. And I just have to make sure that I've got the flying track, but I need to make sure that it also sounds like I'm flying in Hephaestus's region. It was kind of a bit of a jigsaw puzzle to put together initially, but once I was able to see like how it worked for each area, the process got quicker and quicker as I moved to completion. Now I'm working on the Chinese downloadable content, and I have to do it all over again, but it's a completely different palette because I'm using Chinese instruments. But fortunately I've done the research and development now, so I kind of know how I'm going to approach it. I could talk about it for a long time, but I think you get like the idea, like that it's this kind of approach to an open world. I've not heard this kind of approach before, because a lot of open world games, I don't think you actually need, you know, as much music as we've done for Immortals, but the audio team were like, we want a lot of music in this game because of how it looks and because of how it feels to play. Again, if it was a photorealistic world, there's no way we have this much music in the game, but because of the way the game looks, it's, you know, it's a very stylized, cartoony looking game. It's one of those things, I think the player would want to hear more music. And I think actually, if you go into the in-game settings, you can actually increase the amount of music that plays, because Ubisoft, in their open world games, I think they have a music frequency setting in the options menu. You can actually have even more music than what the base amount is. So, and I think you can turn it down. But why would you want to do that?
Well, exactly.
Yeah, it was a really interesting experience, because I've not done an open world game on this scale before. And, you know, not only just being able to deliver a huge amount of music, but also having an understanding of the kind of systems in that make this kind of stuff work. I've really learned a ton that will help me going on to whatever future projects I work on. And it made me more of a believer in what interactive music can do, because I've not been shy about saying that I'm kind of like a, I'm not a skeptic, but I believe that it should be the music first that carries things, and then the systems second. And what this system allowed me to do was focus on the music, and then able to get it to work, and then the system was able to get it to work in a game that ultimately helps the narrative of the game, and also helps the player experience, because they're going to remember what it feels like when they're flying in the game, because the music changes on the fly, and based on how you play. This is kind of a tropey cliche thing to say when you're talking about game soundtracks, but the player will get a different experience every time. But I can honestly say that they will, because it is based, the soundtrack is made based entirely on how you play the game. Now, there are linear pieces, which you've kind of alluded to, like the boss fights and the really intense stuff, which obviously are more straightforward, but that's in balance with all of the exploration music. When you have the exploration music be freeform, more freeform like it is, what it allows you to do is really emphasize the moments that you want to emphasize.
Wow. And what's also so fascinating about that is, you know, we've all been exploring, and if you stay in a place long enough, you hear it looping. Not so much these days, but in earlier games. And so it sounds like this is a solution to that situation too, where it's real obvious that there wasn't quite enough music, and they're just repeating it over and over again.
Well, you know, the funny thing about looping, this is a fascinating one for me, because all of Ori's ambient track loops, and it doesn't bother people. So you have to look into, it goes a little bit deeper. You have to look at what is the music doing for the game. Why do people not mind music looping in Ori, but they do mind it looping in other games? Like, if you go and look online, because honestly, it was a concern of mine. I wrote a lot more music for Ori 2. And part of the reason was like, I don't want things to loop. But you don't hear anyone complaining about the loops in Ori 1. Like, I've looked hard in the comments for like people saying the music loops too much. And it's about the mood that it sets, and is it, you know, is the music too at the forefront, and it's about the purpose of what the music adds to the game. So I don't think looping is a problem in games in of itself. It's really just how it is applied and what the music is doing in terms of like how the player is going through the story. Now, the thing with open world games, the problem with loops in open world games is that, you know, you can literally be in an area for hours and, you know, not really do that much. I mean, I read a story about a guy in World of Warcraft who leveled up to level 60 just by picking flowers. like, literally, that's a story that came out, like, yesterday. And there are people that will do that. So you can't really cater for the edge cases, but I think you can cater for about 80 to 90% of the player base, and I think that's okay. Obviously, you want to try and cater for 100, and maybe we will be able to one day, but I don't think we're quite there yet. But the looping issue, like, this definitely gets around it, because you're not going to be walking all the time. You're going... If you've got to go a long way away, you're going to want to get on your horse. That is just what every player is going to do at some point. If you have to leap off a mountain, you're going to use the flight at some point. And frankly, flying just feels really good in the game. It just does, because the game is spectacular, and flying is a slower method of transportation, but it allows you to get really cool visuals because you're viewing things from a height. So it's rare that you'll be hearing, you'll be hearing too much repeated music. It's just one of those things that you kind of have to like take each game and look at it differently and see what it needs. You know, if I think about the boss fights, you know, they're more straightforward in terms of like, you know, how they repeat, and that's okay because the player's in the moment. It's really just taking a long, hard look and seeing how the music relates to the player and how it like keeps them in the experience. And one of the reasons we looped in Ori is because if you change the music, it actually takes the player out of the moment, because the player is used to hearing music all the time. Is there any silence in Ori? I don't think so. And that's actually a conscious decision. We actually only want silence when it actually really means something. Honestly, even silence in Ori is doesn't really happen. There's usually some kind of drone or pad in the background. And it's all about like having a conscious decision on the development team to make sure that every musical decision is made in service of the player, rather than just and I'm afraid to say I think a lot of developers still do this. Here's the music system, write to it, and then we'll trust the game's music system to deliver the music that we need to. It doesn't really work like that. Not to deliver music on a level that's really going to enhance the game. And I think what you're going to see in this coming generation, PlayStation 5, Xbox Series X, and PC moving forward, my opinion on games music now is that it's almost universally pretty darn good. Like the production quality is outstanding. It's almost usually almost always very well written. So like the music quality, the bass music quality is there. How are you going to differentiate it like from one soundtrack to another? And it's going to be in how well it is implemented. And I'm not just talking about music systems. It's much deeper than that. It's about the connection that the music has to the player when they're playing it. Something that the Final Fantasy VII remake did really well is they played the tracks that everyone loved at the right moments. And that is so key. It's something that the Doom game does really well. The music in that game is so well programmed that it amps up when you expect it to. It's something that I think Ori does very well. We change the music when we really mean to. And that kind of level of granular, like, how is this helping the player? I think that's what's going to be the difference between merely a good soundtrack and a great soundtrack in the coming generation.
Yeah, I think so too. And what I'm really finding now listening to the music in game is that it's much more of an active partner with you.
Yep.
As you're doing whatever you need to do to explore or battle bosses or mini bosses or whatever.
Yep.
It doesn't feel like it's clubbing you over the head with what you should be thinking or feeling, but it's just like right there with you, you know, responding to whatever you're doing. So yeah, it's going to be great to hear what composers are able to do with these new consoles.
I like the clubbing over the head thing is interesting because I like to use the saying that it's like it's not about clubbing over the head. It's about giving the player the opportunity to feel whatever it is they want to feel. Because, you know, some people might say, for example, that the Ori soundtrack, you know, does hit you on the head. But actually, I would say what it does is the music opens up a pathway in your brain or your heart or whatever to feel whatever it is you're feeling at the moment. Because if you look online at the end of Ori 2, there's tons of reaction videos. And people react differently to whoever they connected with in the game. I'm not going to spoil the ending because there are still people who probably haven't played it. But I'll just say that a lot of stuff happens in the ending. and people do react differently because it and what the music does, you know, yes, it has a feel to it. But what it really does is, and what I hope it does, is it allows the player to get in touch with what the emotion is they're feeling in that moment. And different games do that in a different way. And in your comment about it being a partner is the absolute key. When the music is a partner to the gameplay experience, those are the games that really like make a big impression musically. But it can't just be a passive partner. It has to swell and rise when it needs to. And because players want like these moments that they remember forever when they play a game. And one of the problems generally with big open world games is that the music can sometimes just be a passive partner, because there are times when you actually do want the music to make a statement. And when open world games are only reliant on systems to deliver the music, you actually lose a little bit of that. And there's all of this great music, but if it isn't given a platform to shine, then you never get like that big epic moment. One moment that literally everyone talks about this year is the Ghost of Tsushima opening. You're riding across the field. It's the beautiful flowers and everything. You're riding across on your horse, and the theme kicks in, and it's awesome. Like that is just a very simple example. Now, that's not very difficult to execute. But someone actually had to think about it, and then it had to be executed and put in the game. And it's those kind of moments that need to be peppered throughout game soundtracks. And this is what I'm kind of talking about, like what's going to be happening in the next generation. Like if you have those moments and combine them with the systems-based approach that gives you coverage across open worlds, then you're going to have like a soundtrack for the ages.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And we're getting there. I mean, we're yes. getting really close right now. And I know how much you love writing music for boss battles. So
yes.
What was especially fun about writing for the bosses in Phoenix?
I mean, all of it, to be honest. Like, I think, well, first of all, you see the creature designs, and it's just like, okay, great. I finally get to do the Medusa piece.
Yeah.
You see the creature design for Typhon, and it's just like, okay, this is really cool. And I remember when I first sent in like first draft for the Medusa fight, they were like, well, this is great, but can you just make it louder? And I'm like, louder? Okay, there's a lot going on here. And I'm like, you don't have to ask me twice to make it louder. I think, again, one of the cool things about writing, I've been blessed this year, you know, to do two very high stylized games, you know, both with Ori and Immortals. The cool thing about doing boss fights that are heavily stylized is you can really go all out on them, and it never ever feels like it's doing too much. Again, in the photorealistic games, you have to be more careful about going all out, because when it's photorealistic, you actually need to hear the sound effects. But here, it's more like, I think what Ubisoft wanted is a sense of fun. Like, even though it is dangerous, there's still like a sense of fun, because Phoenix is kind of a badass, especially by the point that you're fighting the bosses in the game. So they're like, yes, it needs to have a sense of danger, but it also needs to be fun, and the tracks need to be something that the player can enjoy, you know, can enjoy listening to, because, you know, they might struggle, depending on what difficulty mode you're playing on, you might struggle against the boss. And so it wasn't dissimilar to my approach on Ori. The difference is that I would say on Ori, I really was mindful of how Ori was feeling in that moment, whereas Phoenix, by the point she or he, because you can choose the gender of your character, by the time Phoenix gets to the point of fighting bosses in the game, Phoenix is pretty confident, and it's shown throughout the game that Phoenix is pretty headstrong and will just dive into any situation. So the emphasis was more of like making it's like, hell yeah, I'm fighting Medusa, rather than, oh my god, I'm fighting Medusa. And there is a subtle difference musically. And I think the only time that we really feel like true danger in the music, in the entire soundtrack, is actually really when the music is told from the point of view of Typhon. So that's told in flashbacks throughout the game, like how the Golden Isle got into this situation and when you enter Typhon's lair at the end. Then the music like actually has a sense of danger because, you know, Typhon's pretty powerful. But everything else in the rest of the game is really designed to reinforce Phoenix.
So how do you plan out the music for a boss battle? I mean, like the architecture of it from, you know, start to finish. I mean, do you have the end goal of how the music is going to sound first and then work backwards from there? Or I'm just curious about how you build up a boss battle track.
It's, I think the first thing to do is, you know, look at how the boss moves in the game. That for me is actually where it all starts. Like, how does the boss move? Is it slow? Is it fast? You know, what does it do? What attacks is it doing? You know, a boss with a giant hammer that moves slowly is going to be different to a boss that, you know, shoots magic at you. Like, just in terms of how they move and how they feel. So that, you know, that defines tempo for me. It's funny because I feel like a lot of my answers, like, they sound similar. Even though the question is different, they sound similar. I'm like, I decide the tempo first, and then I decide the instruments, and then I write the melody. Like it's because that is, honestly, tempo is like the first thing I try to figure out before I write a cue. Like, how, because the speed for me dictates everything. It dictates what rhythms I'm going to use. It dictates, like, the pacing of the melody. And it actually also dictates the structure of the track, because music that has like an A-B-A structure is going to be very different if your tempo is slow compared to if your tempo is fast. Like, if your tempo is fast, you might need to repeat B and A again, whereas if it's slow, you might just be able to get away with A-B-A. If it's a fast tempo, A-B-A-B-A. So the tempo defines a lot of different things for me. So once that's established, I've based that on looking at the gameplay. Then it's about choosing instruments. Now, the thing is about the instruments here is that there is one boss fight per region. So the instrument choices are already partially defined by the region that you're in. So that kind of like helps that process a little bit. And then it's really, you know, it's the same process for me across most of the games I work on. I bring the gameplay video in myself and I just write to it with the sound effects. And most of all, I just want to create a vibe of music that keeps the player engaged. And I can't really tell you how that happens. It's just a process that goes on and on and on until I find something that I feel works. I think it helps that I've had the same process for, you know, half a decade now in terms of approaching like different situations in music. But really building it up is really just taking a look at what the gameplay is doing and then writing music to reflect it. And, you know, it's the same in Ori. Like with Ori, we had the different phases and they were clearly very different. And so that allowed for, you know, allowed for switch ups in the music. Whereas in Immortals, the boss fights generally take place within the same arena, so you can't really have that hard change in the music because it just feels gimmicky, and there's nothing I hate more than music in games that feels gimmicky. That's like something I was looking to avoid. So really it's just about, you know, watching the gameplay, matching the gameplay, and then making sure it fits the overall tone of the region in the game. And that's like, that was defined by like a bunch of decisions that I'd made like months prior. So a lot of it in this game was already set in place for when I got around to doing the boss fights.
Yeah, which is great because, you know, all the prep work, all the, you know, sowing the seeds so that you've got this little garden that you can choose from is a great method of working. And I remember when you were on a GDC panel talking about the hard lessons that you've learned over your career. And one of yours was that you can't do everything yourself. And so I'm wondering if there's anybody else that you'd like to give a shout out to on this project.
Well, I got to give a shout out to Kelsey Mira, who sung the main theme and credits. She did a tremendous job. Kristen, I think she played on this more than on Ori, I think in terms of like actual minutes because of all the flying music. So fun fact, only the beginning and end credits was recorded live, thanks COVID. I'm going to blame COVID with that. So everything you actually hear on the soundtrack is mocked up and it's virtual by yours truly. But I did have my mix engineer, Steve Kempster, mix a lot of the combat tracks, especially because they needed some extra oomph. And it's harder to get digital samples to have that extra oomph if you don't have the live elements. The orchestra that played the opening and end titles was Nashville, who I've recorded with many times, Nashville Scoring Orchestra. So yeah, this was an interesting one because, like, especially coming out of Ori, which was like this massive production with so many moving parts and of course changing schedules. And I knew this one would be mostly in the box. It was actually interesting, like, because I've been doing so much recording in the last, 3 years now, especially 4 years, to be honest. It was actually an interesting challenge to be like, can I deliver a soundtrack that is done digitally but still has the right vibe for the game? And I think because of all the live solo instruments that are on the game, especially the woodwind and the Greek lyres, the soundtrack has a flavor to it that feels, I don't know if it feels live, but it has a vibe. And that took quite a fair amount of time to get right.
Thank you. Yeah, it really feels handcrafted because of those instruments. And it feels, what those instruments do for me anyway, listening to them, is they have a really human quality to them because people played them. So it's, rather than just, you know, nothing but samples.
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, if one advice that a lot of composers like to give is that even if you don't have the facility to record a, you know, massive orchestra, and by the way, if you do have the facility to record a massive orchestra, make sure that it's right for the game, because not every game needs a massive orchestra. But if you don't, it still makes a difference to have one or two instruments that are live, and it's much cheaper to record one or two instruments than it obviously is to record 70. And actually, I listened to this soundtrack now and how big and orchestral it is. This would have been one of the most expensive soundtracks ever to record. to record properly, right. Like we're going to do it in London or Los Angeles for sure. So, when you have individuals, and one of the great things about hiring an individual musician is that they're going to bring their own spin on it. Like, you put the notes on the page, but an individual musician, you could give the same woodwind line or the same violin line, same cello line to two different players, and they're both going to play it differently. Especially if you ask them to like add little ornaments, which is something that Kristen is incredible at doing. Like, she has a knack for making something sound more idiomatic than what it is on the page. They're going to do the ornaments slightly differently. They're going to do all of these little nuances that are part of their character. And when you can infuse a soundtrack with a bunch of different individual musicians' character, you end up with, like what you just said, you end up with something that sounds handcrafted. And it's a much easier way to give your score personality, and obviously it bypasses a ton of work because you don't have to worry about orchestration and copying and printing and engineering and all of that stuff. It's also just really fun, like getting a music file back from an individual performer with like their own idiosyncrasies on the performance is really fascinating to me. I'm working, I'm working with several individual musicians on a different project right now, and every time I get something back from all of them, it's just like, wow, I'd never would have even thought to do that. And it's not something you can even write on the notation, like, because again, it's part of capturing that individual's performance. So yeah, well, thank you for saying it feels handcrafted, because that's kind of the approach that I want to have on every score, to be honest.
Yeah, well, success. So, no, it's a phenomenal score, and the game is just so wonderful, and the music is just such an integral part. It's just such a perfect fit for the game. And
I think this game is maybe the game that people needed in 2020. Mm-hmm. I think it's funny. I think there are some games this year, and I'm going to include The Last of Us 2. It's a great game, but like, I think people struggled with it this year just because we don't need a zombie game about the, you know, about the end of the world, yeah, in 2020 when we're literally living it.
That's just what I was going to say.
That doesn't mean it's a bad game. I think the perception of it might have been different if it had been released last year or even next year. It's still an incredible game. But it's been fascinating. You know, we can all talk about Animal Crossing. Like, Animal Crossing is the game that brought everyone together this year, and I think there are games that it's depending on when you release them, it can greatly change the impact of how they're perceived. I think, you know, Immortals is, you know, it, I don't think anyone is surprised. You know, it's clearly following like the kind of game that Ubisoft makes. It's a big open world, the team admits themselves that they were inspired by Breath of the Wild, and that's a game that people want to play, and people, you know, and people have enjoyed playing it, like the ones that are playing it. And there's so many different open world games to choose from now, and Immortals, to me at least, and of course I'm going to say this because I worked on it, but it's a breath of fresh air, especially at the end of what has been a pretty tough year for a lot of people. And you know, if you want a dark game, there's plenty of them out there. So I think sometimes it's nice to have that balance. And I've been very, very fortunate this year, because you know there are parallels between Immortals and Ori, just in terms of like the palette and you know how they look and how they feel. But it was kind of nice to have two games on the more positive scale of things. I've got plenty of dark stuff coming in the future, but it was really breath of fresh air to do a game like Immortals, and especially with it being my first open world game, I could not have asked for a better collaboration team in terms, just like, and I've kind of already hinted at this in terms of the implementation. I mean, they really made my life very easy, and when you look at how much music was written, it would have been very easy to get overwhelmed. But actually I never felt overwhelmed by this project. It was a pleasure to work on, and I hope people are enjoying it.
Yeah, it's just, it's wonderful. And first of all, thank you for your time, and I hope we get a chance to talk about some of these other projects that you've got simmering away. So Gareth, it's been just really phenomenal to talk with you. So thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Kate.